Genital herpes is a pretty monstrous virus which afflicts men and women. Now, it's not terminal, but what can be more painful and kind of embarrassing than coping with sores covering your genitals, sores that can make it difficult to even walk or sit? Genital herpes now accounts for at least 13% of all venereal disease. Many people who get herpes find to their distress that it can be difficult to get rid of and that it can become recurrent. It's now believed that women who contract herpes may be more likely to get cervical cancer. With me are two doctors who have developed a cream that seems to be effective in the treatment of herpes. My guests are Dr. Robert Gentoli, who's an associate professor at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. He's also a gynecologist at the University of Pennsylvania Hospital. With us also is Dr. Herbert Blau, who is a virologist at the Shai Institute and a professor at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. They are both with also the University of Pennsylvania Comprehensive Cancer Center. Welcome both of you to Fresh Air, Dr. Blau and Dr. Gentoli. I think if you found yourself with something like genital herpes, that you would be apt to ask yourself this question: why am I suffering with this really awful disease that there isn't right now a cure for or even an excellent pain reliever for, while at the same time we can send men to the moon and satellites that orbit the Earth? It's really an irony in a way, because one seems like it would be so much easier to solve than the other. And that leads to the question, what are priorities in research? How do we decide where money goes, and how do we decide what diseases are given priority in research? How did you get to be researching genital herpes?
Well, at the University of Pennsylvania, I was seeing women with herpes, and Dr. Blau, my associate, was doing research at the Shai Eye Institute on developing a trial with 2-deoxyglucose, and it just sort of fell in naturally that we both started to work together. And once we had clearance from the FDA so that we could conduct the clinical trial, we started, and we're very pleased with the results. So we have continued over the past 3 years to gather information on the drug, and at this point, as you say, it's really sort of ironical that we don't have better cures for viruses, but even the common cold is still something that people just sort of grin and bear. But when you come to the cold, you don't worry about other things. And right now, the literature is inundated with women reading about cervical cancer, reading about infants being affected by herpes. And we don't want to really scare the people out there, because this is not a major problem. I feel that women that I see in my practice with genital herpes, we follow them just routinely with pap smears, and this is all that they have to have. I don't think they have to be worried about cervical cancer and the other implications.
Have you been in the position of seeing patients, seeing women or men who have herpes and who you really haven't been able to help them in much of any way? Well, grin and bear it. There's really no medicines available now. Is that an experience that led at all to your research on this?
Well, not exactly. I, being in an eye institute, and by the way, herpes is the most common cause of infectious blindness in this country. We were led to sort of attack this problem at the molecular level, working initially in the eye and at the test tube level. And then with Dr. Gentoli and I also were in the Navy together in the reserves, and we had the chance to interface very frequently. So it was obvious to me that genital herpes is a major problem in this country. And you're quite right in terms of the funding priorities. These are not dictated by, unfortunately, those of us out doing research, but primarily by the Office of Management and Budget and by Congress and the President. So this is, and it takes a lot of time to generate new funds for any new project, by the way. It may take a budget which is 2 years down the pike. So I can't address myself to that. But obviously, we've been seeing the positive side of the story, because we've been working on a way to get at the disease. And so we have, with few exceptions, had failures. So it's been a very positive one. But now we've been getting, you know, telephone calls from all over the country. And you realize, and other organizations that are active in this, have brought this to our attention, that there are a lot of people who are sufferers with chronic herpes, and they've had it for years. And we have not treated men, by the way, to any great extent. Our study is limited primarily to women.
Can you describe for us the symptoms of this disease, and then describe for us what your cream can do?
Well, there's usually a prodromal period. And that means there's an initial period of some itching, perhaps, or a little pain in that area. And that's followed by the development of a sore or a lesion, as we call it, which is normally a vesicular. That's a small little blister filled with fluid. And that spreads and coalesces and forms a larger cluster, if you like. And frequently these ulcerate. And then the virus spreads deeper into the tissues and goes to the lymph nodes and the glands in the groin. And those are tender and painful. And frequently, in some cases, the virus does reside in the neural tissue, like the presacral ganglion. And some people believe this is the source of the virus's residence, if you like, and it's reactivated. It comes back from that site. And in addition to that, these people frequently have bladder problems, and they present with pain and urination. And they're washed out, and they're tired, and they may have a fever if it's their first episode. So it's a really debilitating disease, and of course their social life is affected, as you can well imagine.
How is genital herpes contracted?
Genital herpes is contracted mainly through a venereal modality, and we feel that oral genital sex nowadays plays a big part in this. In fact, 90% of our patients had a positive history. There are other means, so it doesn't have to be 100%.
Does someone, if someone's going to get infected by it through oral genital sex, would the person who is infecting them have to have a cold sore or something? Because herpes also exists within the mouth. There's another version of that virus that would reside in the mouth.
Not necessarily. There could be another genital lesion, or it could be just an ulcer in the mouth, or it could be the common cold sore or fever blister.
Okay.
It has been reported that the virus is shed, by the way, in the saliva, even though a lesion might not necessarily be present at that time. Whether that's an infectious state or not is not known yet.
What kinds of results have you gotten with your cream?
Well, the results have been very gratifying with initial mucocutaneous lesions. That's the first time they develop a lesion in the genital area. We see almost a 90% cure rate. That means there's no recurrence over a three-year period with the first lesion. With those with recurrent lesions, we also have a very favorable response. 90%, again, are favorable. Of that, we divide it into two groups. 50% have no further recurrences. Other have recurrences which are fewer in number. Lesions are more sparse. Okay, they don't coalesce. And the systemic response, such as fever, malaise, etc., is markedly reduced. And a few of those, two or three in our case, have not responded to medication. But these have been treated with agents which are known to be mutagens, which will affect the genetic capability of the virus and perhaps change its characteristics.
Anyone listening now who has had herpes is going to want to know when, how soon the cream will be developed to the point and approved by the FDA and available to the public. What are your projections for that?
Right now we're using it on a trial basis, but we're not authorized to recommend or give it out to other physicians for use. And I would estimate 2 to 3 years before it would be over the counter through prescription type of sales.
We have found an unfortunate thing through the years, and that is sometimes a drug that is wonderful in curing one problem creates a second problem in its stead. What kinds of processes do you have to go through to make sure that the cream that you're developing isn't going to, over a period of time, have negative side effects on the people who use
it? Well, this is a very difficult process and is very, very costly. Number one, you have to establish clinical guidelines. Secondly, you've got to show the drug is efficacious both in a variety of systems, usually tissue culture, and perhaps at least two animal models. We jumped the gun and went directly into a human model after testing it in rabbits to make sure that it had efficacy in terms of treating corneal infections. And so I think we perhaps shaved off 1 or 2 years off the timetable. It may take as much as $5 million to develop a drug for clinical use on the outside, and I wouldn't even hazard a guess today, based on inflation, as to how much that might be several years down the pike. we're hopeful that if we move ahead quickly with our probes, that we might be able to accelerate the process. And, of course, you have to deal with the Food and Drug Administration, and you file what's initially called an IND, which is an investigative new drug application, and you go through several phases on that. The third phase, which is the one we're currently in, will evolve and allow us to test in other centers in the country. And when that takes place, if we gain approval on that, we can then move ahead with a new drug application, which is then permission to use this drug on an experimental basis again until all the side effects, etc., are characterized. But that may take several years.
If you have a cold, you may be in a lot of discomfort, but you're not going to be particularly ashamed about letting anyone know about it. If you have something like genital herpes, you might be really embarrassed by it and may be very reluctant to discuss it with anyone, including a doctor. Have you found that to be the case?
This is probably the case in all venereal diseases. And as you mentioned, genital herpes making up around 13%. That is an estimate because of all the genital diseases such as syphilis and gonorrhea, the true numbers are never known because a lot of people are scared and they tend not to seek help. But I think as any disease, herpes should be examined by a physician and help sought.